Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Eva Dong, who is the lead of AI value realization at Google Cloud. With over 10 plus years of experience, she has held leadership roles at McKinsey & Co. and Visa Inc. Eva's technical experience empowers her to create significant impact through data science and AI solutions. As a previous entrepreneur of an AI startup, she's passionate about enabling professionals to navigate and lead in an AI-powered world. Welcome, Eva.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Thank you so much. Yes, and thank you very much. I usually like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
Yeah, we're diving right in. I was born in a city called Changchun. It's in the northeast part of China. So to help you imagine it, it is somewhere between Russia and North Korea. So it's a high elevation, colder area. People are known for really straightforward personalities, which I also follow the same trend. My parents are all bankers. So beyond my parents, my whole family, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, and my parents are all bankers. Banking in China is slightly different than banking in the US. In the US, when you say banking, you think about like the World Trade, the Wall Street. But here in China, it works a little bit differently. So we have one central bank, and then there's four major national banks owned by the government. It's a very different system. It's a different culture. My whole family is immersed in that. So growing up, I have many friends from other banking families. We live in this banking community. That's how I grew up.
So obviously you didn't follow in the banking. When you were a kid, did you think you were going to become a banker, or did you have some other kind of dream of what you wanted to be?
I think for a long time, I didn't really have individual thinking. I think maybe as far as like 18 years old. Looking back, and looking at the Gen Zs today, a lot of kids have very independent thinking, have a really young age, which I wish I could have some of that when I was younger. I was mostly like trying to be the good kid when I grew up, like study well. I was a math Olympian, which is something I'm very proud of. like math competition in China, as you can imagine, is very intense. So how it goes is like I would start competing in like the city level, and then after I pass that, I go to the province level, and after that, I made it into the national Olympian team, which I'm very proud. I made that when I was like 13. So trying to be the good kid, study well, do this well, do that well, but didn't really have the independent thinking until I came to college. And one thing I really appreciate about my undergrad university, Zhejiang University, is that we didn't have to choose a major during our first year. So I really had the time to explore all kinds of disciplines in that first year. What I wanted to do is one, something quantitative, so I can follow my passion for math. And secondly, I wanted to have like impact. Like, what can I do to have impact like right away? From my parents, I chose finance, which doesn't sound like independent thinking, but I did give a lot of thoughts. Did finance in the undergrad, graduated from Zhejiang University, and then I wanted to do something more quantitative. So I came to University of Michigan for financial engineering program. So it's like one more step forward towards that quantitativeness.
Yeah. It's above my pay grade. So, I'm curious about the decision to come to the U.S. So, because that's what was your perception of the U.S. up and before you came, and then how did it change?
Yeah. I think I have like an unrealistic expectation of US, as many people did before they came to the US. I mean, a lot of this from TV shows like Gossip Girls. That's how I imagine New York, which I'm the city I'm living now, which is like not like Gossip Girl. Your Desperate Housewives. I think like there are 8 seasons or 6 seasons, something like that. I watch all of it and shape my perspective about Los Angeles, which somehow still true. I say most of them are unrealistic expectation. But I think one lucky thing is like I went to University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and Ann Arbor is with this like quite little Midwest town, which most of the people there are either students or staff or long-term residents who are well educated. So I was very protected in this non-chaotic academic environment. And I think it was my first job when I landed my first job at Visa when I came to San Francisco. That's my real like reflection of US and start to shaping.
Well, it's interesting. So I have daughters, I have twin daughters that are at Penn State right now. So I won't get into the Michigan Penn State rivalry. But my daughters were huge Gossip Girl fans, and I still think they have that impression of what New York is like, even though they've been many times. There's you want it to be a certain way of what you see portrayed. So quantitative stuff, when, because you're now really you're the the biggest tech company in the world, arguably. What was there a time where you were interested? Did your parents kind of innovative in banking, or when did technology and innovation become important to you or interesting to you?
I think it probably is my first coding class. So this is like back in the old age, and then that's back in the time when C++ is still a new and innovative coding language, which sounds like ancient right now. So I pick up my first programming language in my freshman year in C++, and that just opened a huge door for me, because as someone who's passionate about math for many years, I'm very used to use my brain and use my pen and pencil to figure it out. It might take hours just to figure out one formula. It can take hours to get to the one right numbers. I'm very used to that. And when the first time I start coding in C++, I realized, oh, things can be just you code for 20 minutes and could save you efforts for hours, even days. That opened a brand new door for me. So that I started to realize, okay, the power of computer, the power of programming. And the programming started from there. So like back in the days, after C++, people pick up like R, MATLAB, which are all at this stage like not super popular programming languages, and eventually come to Python. I would say probably Python is the easier to understand and more interpretive, but I really appreciate my days in C++ when coding was not easy. There's no vibe coding, there's no generative AI. You have to remember everything you need to code, and there wasn't a lot of functions in C++, so you have to form the functions yourself. That kind of training is hard, but it's very good for me as an early day technician.
Yeah, it's interesting. Paul Reutzer, who we both know from the Marketing Institute, tells the story about when he was in math, and he's not a math, he's a journalist, and he was in high school, and his teacher, he said to his teacher, "I don't need to learn this math. I'll never use it. And why do we need to do this?" And the teacher said, "Because it's hard." And something clicked for him, and I love that, because it's the idea is that AI and these technologies is not supposed to necessarily, yes, faster and easier, but for learning, you need to do the, you need to put in the work. You need to put in the hard work to learn something, and not just that specific skill, but you need to train yourself to be a critical thinker and understand that understanding what you're doing in a way that I worry a little bit may get lost with the advances of AI, because it's so powerful. And then so you saw computers. When were you first introduced to kind of artificial intelligence and what machine learning, kind of what did you like, oh wait, there's this particular computer coding thing that's pretty interesting.
Probably. I mean, my days at University of Michigan. So I was in the financial engineering program. So for the listeners who are not super familiar with this non-popular subject, this kind of discipline started to emerge after 2008, the financial crisis. That's when like algorithm trading and algorithm-based risk management start become very popular. So this program was hosted by both the College of Engineering, the Ross Business School, and the Mass Department. So we're supposed to take courses across. I think about at that time, I start to get to know machine learning, and then start to use machine learning in an academia way. And I got my first internship at Visa at the same time as a data scientist in cybersecurity. So yeah, this is another thing I'm actually very lucky and really appreciate. So that was back in like 2013. Like data scientists as a role just start emerging in the Silicon Valley, not even the whole US, just in the Silicon Valley. And cybersecurity was also, an emerging topic around the same time. So I was so fortunate to be a data scientist in cybersecurity, like acting like the coolest kid in the class. So that was a very great opportunity for me, and I would say one of my transitional point in my career.
So speaking of your career, you were at McKinsey, which is again, one of the things I like about it is it, from what I understand, incredible training. You bring the brightest minds together in one place. How did that experience kind of impact your thinking about how you approach AI in business? Because again, you're coming in from a quantitative and you're also thinking about from the business perspective. What was the McKinsey experience like?
So I think the really good thing is I was a technical data scientist first at Visa. Then I joined McKinsey as a data scientist consultant. So the difference between the two roles is in my prior role, I just need to do really good modeling, like data analytics. I need to be technical. I need to be exact. And especially I was in cybersecurity, so everything is so exact. Everything need to be in real time, exactly how it is. And when I transitioned to McKinsey, my first year was relatively difficult because I already have this habit, a working habit of to be a really technical, exact, accurate data scientist. But what McKinsey told me, more importantly, is like one thing, it is like how cool the technology is. It is another thing on whether it works. And when I say it works, it need to work really well for the client. That means revenue growth, efficiency, like better logistic, like better marketing, like more product sold, more customer, more audience. Like that's real impact. So I had probably my first year was transitioning hard from a technical data scientist on getting the accurate number to impact. That probably took me a year. And then the following 7 years at McKinsey just keep taking on that further and further. So I think my biggest lesson from McKinsey is like, let's focus on what works, not what is the best. They're like, how to say? Maybe the better way to say, like, what is the best is defined by the impact, not defined by the technology.
Right, you can have some. It's kind of in marketing. I talk about you can have the most beautiful ad in the world, but if it doesn't help you grow your business, it's not a great ad. If people don't know what the ad was for, you're like, wait, but it was so nice and so well produced, and nobody cares. It's about the performance, about the results that you get from it, even if it's a beautiful, technical thing. So I'm curious, this current role, lead of AI value realization. Can you unpack or interpret that for us non-technical people? What is your job now?
Of course. So I'm part of Google Cloud, which is the enterprise arm of Google. And within Google Cloud, we have a department called Google Cloud Consulting. So we provide all kinds of sales and professional service to our Google Cloud client. And then specifically, I provide a value realization service for them. So put that in very simple terms. There are like three questions I try to answer for them. So one is, what does success look like for you with this AI product or with this AI service? Two is, how much does it cost you to reach that success? And then the last part is like, what is your return of investment? So those three questions are like what I try to answer with my client, and then try to define success, define cost, define return of investment to picture this roadmap for them. Because I think value, like AI is no longer a hype anymore. It might be a hype in 2022 and 2023, but right now we're talking about like real business. Everything needs to work. Again, so back to that McKinsey comment, right? Like everything needs to have impact, have work, revenue growth, cost efficiency to count as a good technology. So I think like this is also a newer position of Google. We just start providing this kind of service to our clients. I think we are riding the trend of AI, and this is what enterprise need at this moment.
Yeah, and it's funny because people still refer to AI as a trend, which I think is, I find it a little funny because I'm convinced it's gonna not a trend. It's now changing everything, everywhere. What do you find most challenging about your current role?
I always find sales a little bit challenging for me. So that's two parts of my job. One is the sales part, and then one is the service part after the sales is done. Sure. Similar when I was at McKinsey, because I keep progressing a little bit closer to the leadership role. And then sales is part. I feel like regardless what role you are, when you move up, sales is always part of it. And I would say sales is not naturally in my DNA. So like as a math kid, as a data scientist, like as a financial engineer, my nature, my DNA is do things like, let's define success. Let's get there. Let's do things. Sales is a lot of back and forth, a lot of art. I still do it, but I'll say it is something like I'm not like naturally trained. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because I think there are people trying to use AI in a more technical, scientific way of sales in terms of, you know, you're using it to impact the conversations you have. So I still think it has a role within the sales process of getting to know, because for me it's all about who your audience is and, you know, what are their needs and what do they care about. And I think that AI has the opportunity to use a lot of data to figure out what this person cares about or what this audience cares about. And we'll see, because, you know, with the advent of AI sales reps who are calling people, that's coming and getting and it'll be interesting, you know, whether or not adoption of that changes. The only corollary is there were studies done about customer service, and people that there was a company that was using a lot of AI bots for customer service, text only, and people were complaining. But when they looked at the data, they were most of the complaints were about the human customer service, not the AI.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, we're in this weird transition period, and I think it's, there's an art and science to how there's a science to AI, and then there's the art of how you use AI. And I think that keeps evolving in a way that I find really interesting. Okay, well, let's flip it. What do you find most rewarding about your job? I guess it's not the sales, so I'm assuming it's going to be on the service side.
Definitely on the service side. I'm always very passionate about enabling people. So I think this is pretty consistent throughout my career. At my 8 years at McKinsey and now at Google, I'm always in client-facing roles. And also expand that a little bit further, just like in my life, I really enjoy enabling people. It could be enabling like a teammate on a certain area I'm good at. It could be coaching my client to help them adopt the latest technology, adopt the latest value methodology. It could be even, you know, like sharing my ideas with a senior leader. And then like, you know, we can learn from each other. It's like some kind of like upper management and upper coaching. So that's something I'm really passionate about. It's really rewarding for me to see, okay, they wasn't able to do something, but maybe after working with me, after talking to me, they realize, okay, maybe they could try this, they could do that, and eventually accomplish it. So the enabling people part is quite rewarding for me.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who's trying to learn as much about AI and then share it with people, when they have those aha moments, it's pretty cool. Like they're like, oh my God, like this is really having an impact on how they do their work or, you know, personal stuff. It's definitely rewarding. Okay. So you've had a very, you know, you came to the US for university. If you were going to go back in time, having all this wonderful experience you've had, and you could give your 21-year-old self a piece of advice, what would it be?
That's a really good question. But just knowing myself and how overthinking I can be sometimes, I would probably just not give any specific advice because if like the young me saw the old me give me a message, I'm definitely going to overanalyze that message and overthink on that and probably do something stupid because of it. I would just say just go for it. I'm pretty happy with some critical early decisions I made in my life, which is usually about going broad. So like, from graduating in China, coming to the US is going broad for me. Choosing emerging profession as a data scientist was going broad. And then McKinsey was the perfect place to go broad. I worked in many different continents, including all over North America. I was stationed in London for a year. I worked in Africa for a while. McKinsey also sent me back to China for a while, just touching the different regions, different industries, different topic, serving different type of clients, really give me the breadth that I would benefit from my entire life. And then even though I'm trying to go deep now, but I really appreciate the early years of myself just to go broad, to be explore, be intellectually curious about everything. So my if I have the time to say something, I'm just like, you just go for it. Just do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, it's funny because I think your advice would seems to be like don't overthink things. But of course, you're 21 yourself. That's what they would do because they wait. What do you mean, don't overthink things? Let me think about that. What does that mean? And so it's one of those things where they say that youth is wasted on the young or something like that. Where we don't appreciate things. I try hard to tell my children things from my experience, but I like the idea of going forward and also about like getting as much breadth as you can, soaking it all in, because each of those cultures, every person you meet has something that you can learn from and widen your perspective. And that's going to put you in a good position no matter when or what you end up doing. And I think it's just, seizing the moment, taking the opportunities that come to you. Speaking of which, you've done very well through your career, between Visa and McKinsey and now Google. Most people would say that, you are a success, and I'm trying to connect, but how would Eva define success?
That's probably like a changing definition. It just like, the definition of AGI keep changing. But
I'm not going to ask you that,
the
but yeah.
Definition of success also keep changing, and then keep changing from people to people, and keep changing for one person from time to time. So I think right now I'll probably define success as like personally feel accomplished, feel like everything I wanted to do, I was able to have a chance to try it, regardless whether that was a success or not. And then have this inner peace about myself, intellectually, physically, mentally. I will call that success. I feel like sometimes it feels like the world is a chaos, right? Like leaving New York area is a chaos. Being in the AI era is a chaos. It's hard to have that inner peace. And I feel like the true, secure, confident, established people have that kind of inner peace. Like when I interact with them, they're fine with everything they have, and even though they're still pushing themselves forward, but that like that inner serenity, that inner peace, I see a lot in a lot of successful people, and I'd love to get there.
You and I both. I think it's, and it's funny because I consider myself kind of an AI humanist. I think one of the things is that AI can really accomplish amazing things in personal and professional. And the question becomes then that frees you up time, how to use that to kind of deepen connection with other people. And I think some of what I find in terms of trying to obtain that inner peace is about the relationships you build and the impact you have. And it's I like to joke that I'm a work in progress and always will be. It's one of those, which in a good way, because I think it to be curious, as you said, one of the things you said was, that intellectual curiosity and interest from others is what keeps things interesting, and I that's why I do this podcast, is why I get to have conversations with people because it enables me to learn something from different perspectives. And as a result, my experience grows and my understanding grows. And I think that's One of the things that's really important for everyone to try and do. It just makes life better. But speaking of making things better, so you work for enterprises, and a lot of, one of the things that you and I think are both aware of, like the lack of AI literacy. And so in terms of if you're an enterprise who's like, okay, we want to, increase our AI literacy, where do we start? Do you have any thoughts on how you'd advise people?
There's probably many different ways. One of the easier way I see is usually each enterprise use some kind of cloud service, regardless whether it's Google Cloud, Azure, or AWS. And then a lot of the AI is embedded in the cloud. So as a result, those service providers will also have all kinds of training courses, all kind of like certifications, and with training for the certification. And if you're already using a cloud provider, they usually offer that like for free or at like a super discounted price. So that could be a very easy way to adopt because like they have already taken the time to design the courses. They know what exactly you need to learn and your employees need to learn. So that could be a very easy way to start, assuming most companies are already using cloud service. And if you want to go a little bit, like personalized, sometimes I see large organizations will have their own like learning team. Their learning team will partner with, third party, let's say like Udemy or Coursera to design some kind of courses for them or like, take some out-of-box courses for them. Either way, I think it shouldn't be too difficult on how to do it. I think the difficult part is, the political, the enterprise decision. Oh, are we going it? How much budget are we going to locate on it? If you're listening, my suggestion is like, please just do it right away. Time is expense. So if your employees are not educated this month, you're already losing opportunity costs on that. So regardless of which way, it's not that difficult. Please educate your employees.
Right. I think you have to be proactive about it sometimes, even if you're in a big organization, and if they're not as AI forward as maybe you would hope, then you be the champion. You start showing, you do some training and show the wins and showcase the case studies, and people go, oh, maybe we want more of this. And so, yeah, I think it's there's a dual responsibility for people to train both from the organizational level and individuals to kind of help lead the charge, those people who understand the importance of it. Now, this is kind of a loaded question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, which is sort of, we've been seeing kind of a lot of people talking about agentic and the things that are coming from the next level of AI and coming fast. So, from your perspective, what do you think the next big trend in AI will be?
I think what I heard a lot on the industry is physical AI, like robotics. But me personally, I think that's still very far away. At least very far away to ha to reach a useful stage. My personal opinion will be personal contacts. And also, this is one of the area Google is trying to push very hard. So to explain that, so we have a lot of AI tools right now. They're generative AI tools, agentic AI tools. But one of the things people run into is like, is this still slow? And the AI still doesn't understand everything about you. So for example, you have a Gemini or you have a ChatGPT that you have been using for years. It probably understand many aspect of you, but not the full aspect of you. It doesn't know what conversation you had with your wife or husband. It doesn't know
Yet.
that, like I like yet. It
And we have
doesn't
that
know.
little pin that we wear all the time, whatever Johnny Ive and Sam Altman are cooking up.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. So I think the hardware and the software is pushing us to that direction. How can I have an AI to know everything about me? And not everybody can do it. This is why I'm so bullish on Google, and that's why I chose Google when I exited from McKinsey, is that I think Google is one of the few players on the market that can do it because Google already have your Gmail as your calendar, has your Google Meet, like it can connect it like to your reservation, it has Google Flights. It already knows everything about you. And if you let AI know about it, obviously it's a personal choice, right? If you let AI know everything about you, it can do so much for you. Proactively. And that personal contact is so different because If I tell AI to book a hotel versus Jeffrey tell AI to book a hotel, that can be very different hotel. We can have different, like, loyalty programs. I prefer high floor, low floor. I prefer near the elevator, far away from the elevator. Like right now, like is like I think we're trending towards that direction, like how to have personal contacts. And then Google could be one of the few players to have that power and information to provide that personal contacts for you. And then probably after that, we can have some robots.
I'm ready for the robots for sure. It's interesting because when I think about, I've been hearing the term kind of operating system for your life. So that if AI knows everything about you, it can really help you as your operating system in whatever area of your life you're looking to enhance. And I think again, it will be that personalization that's people are gonna love because it's gonna be like, you already know what kind of dinner I want to go eat, and you already know, or you've taken a picture of what's inside my fridge, and so I know my meal plan. And that convenience of understanding who I am, and then providing me the things that it knows I like, should hopefully give me some inner serenity, we hope. What about so? Okay, so what are you kind of excited for next in terms of what you're doing at Google or just in general?
So, I think professionally speaking, I'm trying to work with more international clients. So, this is the usual way, right? In Google and in many ways, like the US does something, and then we try to have idea exchange with other parts of the world, to learn from each other and to become better. So I think my goal is I'm trying to work with a client in the Greater China area, with another client in the London area, to have like more exchange, more ideas, with both my client there and my colleagues over there. Personally speaking, I'm trying to increase more public presence. Very lucky to be invited by Jeffrey on this show. I'm going to a conference, AI conference in Colombia, Bogota in July to share some of my experience to the LATAM community, and also going to speak at MakeCon, the Marketing AI conference.
Big man, I'll be
So,
there.
like would love to meet in person. And if anybody's listening and you happen to be in one of the conference, would love to meet in person too.
Great, I love that. Yeah, MakeCon is the Marketing AI Institute's annual conference for those that aren't aware, and it's awesome because they bring amazing people like you to come and speak. So this is the kind of rapid fire, although it doesn't always work that way. So we'll, if there's a question that seems not too rapid, you feel free to pass. There's no rules here. So I'll start with one that's usually a little bit challenging. So if a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
I have so many beautiful actresses in my mind, who I don't look like. I think I want to pick Gemma Chan. So if you have watched Super Rich Asian or the newest Marvels, she's really elegant Asian woman, which I'm not exactly are, but who will be beautiful and perfect for this.
I'm sure she'd do a lovely job. Speaking of which, can you name one of your favorite movies?
Oh yeah, for sure. Life of Pi.
Oh,
Absolutely.
I love the book. I love the movie. It's beautiful. Yeah, so I like that
Yeah.
one. Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Yeah. Harry Potter, the whole series. I probably read each book like more than 10 times per book. And did role play and reading sessions with my friends throughout my childhood. Just love Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, I credit a lot for getting me back into reading. So I, read in school, and then I was kind of like not a real reading for pleasure. And once I read Harry Potter, and I just enjoyed it so much, I'm like, oh, books can be like this. And so it opened up a reading path that I really enjoyed. All right, now this is a tricky one, but maybe not. Can you name a favorite AI tool?
So the two tool I use very, very frequently, like many times per day, one is Gemini, the other is Notebook LM. Gemini is good for like thinking, reasoning, brainstorming. Notebook LM is really good at summarizing a large amount of documents for me.
And I love their audio feature, which I refer to as mini podcasts. I use it all the time to take a big report and then share with people, hey, You don't have time to read this 300-page report. Why don't you listen to a little AI mini podcast? And it's fantastic. I really like it. Can you name a favorite emoji?
I think the one I use the most frequently is that crying and laughing face at the same time.
Okay, but is it straight on or is it to the side?
Oh, good question. I think for me, it's more straight on more
Okay.
often. It's just, I feel like that's just life, you know, you laugh, you cry, and you keep going.
I love it. How about a favorite non-digital activity? I know we're all consumed, but when you're not doing AI and digital stuff, what do you like to do?
I love hiking. I love national parks. I've been to probably 50 national parks in the US,
Wow.
almost all the national parks, except ones in Hawaii, Alaska, and US Virgin Islands. And then trying to do that internationally too. Very, very big hiker.
Do you have a favorite of the national parks? I've been to a few, so I'm curious if there's one that really wowed you.
I think my top one is Bryce Canyon. They have hoodoos. It's just like so amazing, so rare. My second is probably Olympian National Park in the Washington State. It just have a variety of everything. Has like a rainforest, had the snow mountains, has the Twilight Beach if you watch Twilight. I love it. It just has everything I need.
And I think that's where, I would say people get their serenity and balances to go and enjoy nature is really important. What's one thing you can't live without?
My dentist.
Your dentist. You have a beautiful smile, so there you go.
I have three dentists along with me the whole time. One for my regular cleaning and checking, you know, for cavities, one for my Invisalign, another one for surgeries. I do like my like I like I always max out of my dentist insurance, like, you know, I don't in March or something. I just like, keep spending. Like I can't, like, shout out to my dentist. I can't live without you.
I love it. That's definitely a first to have someone say that their dentist. Now this is a hard one, and if you doesn't come start, but so if you could be credited with inventing something, either that already exists or something that doesn't exist, what would it be and why?
I don't know. I'll be inventing this, but I have been trying to promote more awareness and more publicity about women's period and how women and how the general public should not be ashamed to talk about it, to mention it, and to share experience about it.
I love that. So you've been amazing at giving us your time and insights. It's been awesome. Is there anything particularly that, either personally or with Google that you want to promote or share this opportunity to kind of let our audience know where they can find interesting things you want them to know about?
I don't think there's anything particular in my mind, but love to connect with more of the people. Jeffrey and I has been virtual friends for a while. We're still like yet to meet in person. Would love to have more of these kind of like friends and community in my life. And like just like you said, more communications, more curiosity is more improvement for any of us. Would love to connect.
Speaking of connecting, so what is the best way for people to connect with you on social media? What's the best way for people to reach out if they want to connect with you more?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can find me by Eva Dong, work at Google. And also, I'm trying to be a little bit more active on X. My handle is Eva Dong 1010. X is very interesting. You have to be very selective of what you see. Otherwise, you get very emotional about it. I'm trying to do a better job on it.
Yeah, I think you need to curate that list of who you listen to and ignore the rest, because you can fall down the rabbit hole. Well, this has been fantastic. Again, I appreciate your candor and your just warmth and sharing with you your journey. And most of all, I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQNewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes.
If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.